Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the award-eligible Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. It is April 21st, and last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta United again gave up a lead. This time, going up 1-0, only to lose 2-1 to Cincinnati at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It was the team's second consecutive poor result. After taking a lead, the first was a 2-0 lead against Philadelphia that turned into a 2-2 draw. Last night, of course, was a 1-0 lead with a goal scored by Thiago Almada that resulted in a 2-1 loss with two more just awfully, awfully bad goals to give up. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. You're going to hear from Gonzalo Pineda and Brad Guzan because there weren't a whole lot of players left in the locker room by the time we got in there. And then I'm going to answer many of your questions about the MLS team. If this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
So I could go into all the stats, but really, I don't think the stats matter a whole lot in this game. It was a raggedy first half. Both teams created some really good chances that they couldn't take advantage of. Cincinnati's goals were scored by Luca Oriano in the 62nd minute, and Atlanta United killer Luciano Acosta 2 minutes later in the 64th minute. But let's get into the audio. We're going to start with Pineda, who was quick to the interview room last night. I don't know what else he can say to the players after a loss like that. But on Thursday, he talked about the players hopefully learning lessons from the Philadelphia match about how to manage games and see out results. And then, of course, they give up two goals within about 5 minutes of them taking a 1-0 lead. Again, both goals were just awful. So I wanted to know if he's concerned.
I gave a very similar speech in the locker room about we need to learn about how to consolidate these advantages two times in a row. Facing two fantastic teams, Philadelphia and Cincinnati, two of the top teams in the league. And for many moments against both, we were a little bit better. This game was a little bit more even. So I want to first of all say Cincinnati deserves the 3 points and they are a great team. They played very good tonight. It was a real, real challenge. Tactically as well, but also mentally, I think some of the duels that they won that made the difference at times. But tactically, it was challenging for everyone, and they did a good job. So congrats to Pat and his team. They deserve the 3 points. After that, we were winning 1-0. It was so difficult to get that goal. We had a few chances. I had one very clear chance in the first half, and then a couple, Edwin Mosquera also in the first half, one that the first touch will be better, maybe we score the goal. Then the second half, another one from Saba and a very good ball from Bartek or Tristan. And then we couldn't score those goals. And then finally we scored that goal. It was an even game, and we scored that goal. And right after is just, you know, lack of understanding how to solidify the result. The first goal we conceded is, you know, is I was speechless after that. And yeah, it's disappointing. And after that, probably the momentum was for Cincinnati and they got the second goal. So we'll try to work on that. Now we'll have a difficult task in Chicago and we'll try to go there and try to win.
Pineda had to sub out Noah Cobb at halftime. Cobb suffered from a migraine that Pineda said made him, he couldn't see. Cobb couldn't see. Cobb said his vision was really, really blurred I feel bad for him. Some people that I know and love dearly suffer from migraines, and they are not fun. So here's wishing the best to Cobb, that he's able to find a treatment or something that will help him. Now, going into the goals. Thiago Almada's goal, it was a fantastic goal. It was from about 22 yards from the left side of the 18-yard box, outside the 18-yard box. And he put it in the lower right corner. Not a golazo, just a really good shot. But then, so Atlanta United has got some pressure. They'd subbed in Jean De Silva, Jay Fortune, not Dax McCarty. Again, I don't understand why Dax is not seeing the field. And Yorgos Chakamakis in place of Daniel Rios, Edwin Mosquera, who kept getting into good positions, but his execution was not good last night, and Tristan Muyamba. So those players come in immediately after Almada scores. Atlanta United gets a corner kick. Almada, for whatever reason, it wasn't even a short corner. It was like a medium corner. He tries to pass it back toward the top of the box, but he didn't hit it hard enough. Either that or some of the players have talked about the new turf is a little bit sticky. They're having to hit passes harder than they're used to. Maybe Almada just forgot that he had to hit it harder on the new turf, but the ball basically went into space where there was nowhere, not an Atlanta United player even close. Acosta got to it first, played it to Oriano, and he dribbled the length of the field with it really only Brad Guzan to beat. Basically, Thiago started a counterattack for Cincinnati. Here's Pineda talking about it.
It was one play that we trained. I don't know if that's where the decision making of when we do those type of plays. We just made three subs, and probably wasn't the best moment, but it was a play that we trained in the week. But it was just a bad execution in the pass back to Brooks. It was a set play that we tried. So those are the maturity moments that we need to get. You know, we're just scoring a goal. We made three subs at the same time. Can we just put the ball inside the box? Learning lesson for everyone, not just for Thiago and Brooks. It was everyone because we trained that play. So we just need to make sure this is another lesson when we choose to do those type of set plays that we train in the week.
And then here's Pineda on what he and the coaching staff can do to not make this a trend of mismanaging games. And this goes back last year, of course, Atlanta United was awful at in dead ball situations, giving up goals, throw-ins, corner kicks, free kicks. The year before, all the injuries is kind of a wash. The year before that, just horrible with Leeds. Here's Pineda talking about it.
What else can we do? We're showing the film. We're talking about it. We're seeing the same things that you see. We're scoring a goal and then certain individual lapses or however you want to call it, and then we're conceding goals. We're aware of it. We're working on that. We're showing film. And I think the process at some point has to pay off. But today, for example, I feel like, you talk about the experience, but I couldn't start Yaku, I couldn't start Estia, and I couldn't start Derek Williams. I couldn't start a few of those, Jean De Silva. They were coming back from injuries. So, you know, I think once we have the full roster and some of those experienced guys that you're talking about, I mean, maybe we show a little bit better. Today, unfortunately, I feel like that sub from Noah changed some things also, because also Ronald tried his best, but I never put him as a center back in that. It was a desperate movement for me because I had no other options, and you know, some of that. But again, we face a very good team. We were at times better, and then we need to learn from this lesson.
Here's Brad Guzan on what the team can do to stop this trend of blowing leads.
It's down to moments, and we need guys to be able to take responsibility and be better in these moments. Simple as.
Here's Brad on why this keeps happening, going back to last season.
The game of soccer, the game of football is down to moments, right? It's moments, good moments. Thiago has a moment of brilliance and scores a good goal. Then we have moments where we switch off, and it's not good enough. At this level, you get punished, and we do that back-to-back moments, and before you know it, the game is out of sight, and you talk about a team being able to close out a game. We then had nothing from the moment they scored their second goal. We had nothing going forward in terms of opportunities and chances on goal.
Now, on the second goal scored by Cincinnati, again, it was another weird play. DeAndre Yedlin had the ball probably 40 yards from goal on the right. Caleb Wiley didn't really close him down. And to be fair to Wiley, I don't think he wanted to run at Yedlin because Yedlin has a speed. He could get by him and then get in what teams call the prime assist zones. So he was slow to come out on him. But Luis Abram, they kind of lost the defensive shape of the center backs, stepped into a place outside of the penalty box, tracking somebody that he probably didn't need to. It reminded me a little bit of one of Toronto's goals when when Noah Cobb stepped into a space that he didn't need to go to and Derek didn't close. But on this situation, Abram steps into a space he probably didn't need to go to, but it left Ronald Hernandez, who subbed in for Cobb, who has never before played in a two-man center back situation. He's played in three-man center backs for Atlanta United and, to be honest, has struggled as a center back. Well, anyway, it left him trying to defend two players, which he wasn't able to defend either one. Brooks Lennon, I don't know what Brooks was doing on the play, but he didn't track Acosta. Maybe he thought someone else was tracking Acosta. So the ball went to Acosta, 7 yards from 5 yards, 7 yards, whatever distance from goal. He had time to take a touch and just easily put it in the net. Here's Brad talking about it.
I mean, listen, you get guys running free in the box, being able to take a ball down at the penalty spot, take a touch, look at the goalkeeper from 7-8 yards. That's you're going to get punished. You know, it's just watch it back. We don't get pressure to the ball out wide. We don't track runners in the middle of the box. Ball's in the back of the net.
When we come back, we're going to get into the mailbag. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut, are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
All right, we've got a special offer for Southern Fried Soccer listeners. For $1.25 a week, you can get the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Go to ajc.com/BSP, ajc.com/BSP. After every game, we've got 2 pages of Atlanta United coverage. I hope you'll take advantage of this. It's only for new subscribers. All right, we're going to get into the mailbag. Eric with a K, my good buddy, with a good starter statement question that I think reflects everybody's mood. He says, well, they fooled me. I thought Atlanta United was an improved squad from last season. Clearly they're not. They're still plagued by low soccer IQ moves, long switches without field awareness, short corners to the only part of the pitch where the league MVP is lurking, and they play subpar defense. I think the only real difference between last year and this is last season opposing teams punished Atlanta more effectively in the defensive third. Are you seeing things as well, or am I making this up? No. I think, you know, the first few games, Atlanta United did play really good defense, but they also had most of their first-team defensive players in there. Steven Gregerson and Derek Williams are still out with injuries. I don't know who's going to play center back this week if neither can play. And Steen didn't even train with the team last week, so I think it's unlikely he's going to be able to start at Chicago on Saturday. Maybe they try to get Efrain Morales up and going rather than having to play Ronald Hernandez, or Noah Cobb is able to come back. I think that's probably the most likely. But yeah, Atlanta has kind of flirted with disaster in a few games this season, but Brad has made some big, big saves to prevent some of those issues, so I don't think you're wrong, Eric. And he continues, while I'm complaining, he says, is the expected goal stat the dumbest statistic in soccer? I feel like someone who makes far too much money created a computer program that just spits out numbers that appear somewhat believable when anyone on the pitch takes a shot. The whole thing feels like a scam. Yes, I agree with you. I hate the stat. The only reason I use it is because Pineda uses it in press conferences, so I feel like I have to use it just to provide context to what he's saying. To me, it's a goofy stat. It's like, I don't like the wins above replacement stat in baseball, kind of for the same reason. It just feels kind of made up and I don't know, something created by a sports agent to try to get his player more money. Either you score or you don't score. I don't really care about what could have happened. Same for wins above replacement. Either you're good or you're not good. I don't care how good you are compared to the rest of the field. I go back to when Jason Hayward, I think, signed that massive contract with the Cubs. And I was, you know, on social media saying, this is, the Cubs are going to regret this. This is a gigantic mistake. And people were on there, oh, but in wins above replacement, he's one of the best right fielders in the National League. And so I started looking at right fielders in the National League. That particular year, it was an awful, awful crop of outfielders. So, okay, he's better than the others, but the others aren't very good. You're going to see this in the draft this week, too. It's going to be, you're going to see players and you're going to wonder why they go so high. And it's because some of the stats are built against defenses or offenses, whichever side of the ball they play on, against teams that aren't very good. But none of that, it doesn't seem like it's taken into consideration by these teams that select these players. They're just, you know, I was, Facebook has memories, right? And so one popped up yesterday, and this is pretty coincidental, I think. But I was complimenting Peter King back when he was in Sports Illustrated, because this was 2016, I think. There was a offensive lineman for Iowa that everyone rated really, really highly. But King was writing about, well, he didn't really face anybody good in the Big Ten that year. And so, yeah, his stats are going to be good. And sure enough, the guy gets drafted, and I don't even know if he's still in the league anymore. But I started doing the same thing with Bud Dupree out of Oklahoma. And I said, beware the team that drafts Bud Dupree, because most of his stats came against like backup tackles. And sure enough, he's been a serviceable player in the NFL, but I don't think anyone would say that he's had the impact that probably was predicted. On to Brian, who says, can I tie the issues to coaching? He's very frustrated with this. And while I'm sure coaching didn't lead to Almada's corner, it's just constant with this. So yeah, I got a few questions about Pineda and trying to tie the mistakes to coaching. And it's not like Pineda coaches the team to pass the ball to the other team or to not close down guys on crosses or to not track runners. So I can't say that it's Pineda's fault. I do understand, though, that when this keeps happening, it's on the coaches to figure out a way to stop it from continuing to happen. And that doesn't seem to be happening. A new drill, a new mental exercise, some sort of new form of accountability, something needs to be put into place. And for whatever reason, even though the team has turned over the roster and brought in more experienced players and things like that, the past two games, it's happened twice. And now the team has dropped 5 points from its past two home matches, combined with only getting 1 point from its first three road matches. Finishing top four in the East is going to be very, very difficult now, especially because the East is so tough and there's so many good teams. So I can't tie the issues directly to coaching, but I would say that something needs to change with regard to the coaching. And I'm not advocating for like a firing. I just mean in something in the training sessions. Chris says he would be interested to know what I think of the rules changes and whether they made a difference in last night's match. So this was the first weekend that some of the rules changes that were talked about before the season, players having to go off for 2 minutes if a trainer sees them on the field, if they're down for more than 10 seconds, putting the extra time on the scoreboard, having referees talk through VAR decisions. The only thing that confused me last night is toward the end of the first half, Miles Robinson, former Atlanta player, got clattered into by Schleich, knee into Robinson's chest. At the same time, another Cincinnati player, Haglund, went down. The trainers came out and saw Haglund. No trainer saw Miles Robinson. One of the water bringers brought him water, but he was never examined. But for some reason, he had to leave the field for 2 minutes. I did not think that's what the rule was. I thought a player can be down on the field for as long as he wants to. But if a trainer comes out, then he has to sit out for 2 minutes. No trainer saw Miles last night. Somebody brought him water and that was it. They were all looking at Haglund. So I think the rules changes are good. I think that one was either misinterpreted or I just didn't see the trainer examining Miles. Jose says, do we have statistics for how many times the team under Pineda has had the lead and then lost games? We don't have it under Pineda, but overall now, when the team scores first, It is 90-16 and 25 overall, 61-7 and 11 at home, and 29-9 and 14 on the road. When it concedes first, it's a god awful, and these statistics are crazy to me. When it concedes first, it's 9-60 and 23 overall, 7-15 and 11 at home, which is respectable, but on the road, 2-42 and 12, which is crazy, especially considering the money that the team has spent on bringing in attacking players. Pat says, it's a good morning for a second cup and a podcast. I'm going to have a sip of coffee right now, Pat. Thank you. With visions of Araújo dancing in his head, he says, he rewatched the highlights this morning after attending the match last night. He said the team really did squander some quality chances. The one from Saba, like 2 feet from goal, that Alec Can somehow stopped is, you know, egregiously bad. He says, primarily from our attacking mids. While Cincinnati had some opportunities as well, he felt Atlanta United's were of higher quality. He says, kudos to Hernandez for his next man up mentality, but Abram needed to show more patience in the back. He hopes the migraine is a one-off for Cobb because he was solid in the first half and in previous matches. Yeah, Noah Cobb has played exceptionally well, I think, in place of Steen Gregerson. And yeah, you know, I hope the migraine is a one-off. He looked dazed in the locker room after the match. I've never had the misfortune of suffering from a migraine, but I know they are painful. So yeah, hoping Cobb comes back soon. David says, a vocal minority had some hashtag Pineda out trending after yesterday's game. I would say Atlanta was not great last night, but they lost because of awful execution and a decision on a corner kick by one player and a center back falling asleep in a ball over the top. Outside of using Efrain Morales instead of Hernandez to replace Cobb, I don't know how Pineda is really at fault for these mistakes. What am I missing, or is the Pineda out crowd missing something? No, it goes back to what I was talking about before. When the same category of mistakes keep happening. Last year, I put it on the scouting department, signing players who just, for whatever reason, lack that instinct to close out games. And I don't know how you measure that other than just wins losses. So the team, and I'm not saying that I'm the cause of this by any stretch of the imagination. It was, I think, pretty obvious. Went out last summer and started signing veterans from Europe, and in the winter signed veterans from Europe, guys who have hundreds of matches of experience, who know how to close out games. But now in the past two, keeps happening. And now you heard Pineda talk about, well, I didn't have some of those experienced guys on the field last night during those goals, except Yurgo Shakamaki's, a DP, had just come in. John De Silva, one of the summer signings, had come in. You've got Luis Abram, an international for Peru, in the game. You had Bartosz Lisz, an international for Poland, in the game. Ronald Hernandez, albeit out of position, an international for Venezuela, in the game. Brad Guzan, capped by I don't know how many times by the U.S. Men's National Team, in the game. Saba Lobchenitse, an international for Georgia, in the game. So would those two goals have happened if Steen Gregerson were in the lineup? Probably not. He'd have been fast enough. Well, I don't know about the first goal, but he probably wouldn't. He would have been there to head away the second goal. But, you know, when it keeps happening, I can understand the frustration. I don't know if I blame Pineda, but I do think that they got to find some sort of new method, training method, to work on closing out games. Matt says, as annoying as it was to see Atlanta lose in that fashion last night, even with giving up that first goal, are there any real lessons to learn besides it's really hard to win with your central defense pairing for a half being your fourth choice CB and a backup right back? I imagine the club had to alter their style to account for that, making it more difficult to succeed elsewhere. Thanks for everything you do. Well, thank you, Matt. Lessons learned are, don't try a set piece that you've worked on in practice when you have three new players on the field, because I need to go back and watch. I don't know if Thiago put the signal up that we're going to try this. But if he did, it was missed by a whole lot of people. It reminded me, that goal reminded me of one, I think it was DC United, maybe, when Emerson Hyman was on the team. And he was the last guy back on a corner kick. And Hyman was not the guy you wanted as the last back on a corner kick, because, though technically gifted, he was not the fastest cat. and there was the ball got cleared, and Emerson was left to try to chase down a counterattack and couldn't do it. That the goal last night reminded me of that. So, but as far as lessons learned, no, nothing more than what I've already talked about. Kyle says, another frustrating night for Atlanta United and the fans. I was going to let the Philly game slide as a fluke, but having back-to-back matches with severe lapses in concentration, I'm painfully reminded of many 2023 games. Agree or disagree? Nope, totally agree. And I just kind of wrote a story about that that you'll see after it gets edited. After Atlanta went up 1-0, do you think Pineda should have held the subs? No. People get really upset about substitutions. That didn't bother me. Kyle says, I was a bit surprised that he went ahead and made the changes anyway, as it seemed to add to the disruption of the team. No, I mean, you're putting on a DP, you're putting on a veteran. I was surprised it was not Dax and it was Jay instead. But he had Bartok playing defensive midfielder, so maybe that's why he didn't bring in Dax. But the whole point of signing Dax was to protect these types of leads. So no, I don't think he should have held the subs. On to Patrick, who says, hey, Doug, thanks for all you do covering the team. Well, thank you, and I hope you'll thank the AJC by subscribing. I know he can be exhilarating, but I felt like Almada left a huge hole in the center of the field tonight. Often he was wide looking for the ball, but when the team turned it over, it felt like Cincinnati had acres of space through the middle. Whose responsibility should it be to close that down more quickly, Almada's or someone else? Well, it's usually Million Ba and Bartok. So Almada's been drifting more into the left channel. That's by design. I had to get the ball and see. But to me, Thiago is starting to get a little Barco-like in that he likes to get the ball and just kind of stand over it. And it gives the defense time to rest. It's not passing and moving. It's I could be wrong about that. But something seems a little bit different between him last year and him this year. But anyway, closing down the middle is Million Ba and Bartok and some of Almada. Derek says, no question, just wanted to say that short corners are dumb. That is all. All right. Adam says, coffee sip. 10 minutes after the match, and he's still sitting here processing the first goal Atlanta surrendered. He says it has to be the worst corner kick ever, so I can't wait to hear what in Hades happened. Is it me, or was Atlanta worse tonight compared to last week? No, they were definitely worse. At home against a Cincinnati side that struggled to score, and yet Atlanta came off looking like the weaker side. Very good point. Cincinnati only scored 8 goals in 8 games, so scoring 2 tonight was just a bonanza for them. Regarding Bartok, is it me, or has he regressed since arriving? At the least, it does feel like his pairing with Mia Ba has very limited interest in getting involved in the attack. I think Atlanta is overly reliant on Almada being the only midfielder to drive into the paint, as it were. No, I thought Bartok played well last night. I thought he's played really well this season. And he put a couple of balls in last night. It was him who took the shot that resulted in him clattering into Miles Robinson. Tristan has gotten forward a lot this season. He could have had a goal against Philadelphia. So in that comment, I think I disagree with you. And he says, if I never see Acosta playing against Atlanta again, he will be happy. All right, we're going into our last question in the mailbag, or questions from Nick, who says, two observations about the first half. Every ball Atlanta recouped ended back at the box with Guzan. Are the players lacking in confidence to play forward, or is that by design? They just didn't have a whole lot of runners last night. And part of that is you're not going to outrun Miles. It's just not going to happen. They kept trying, and Miles kept winning that last night. And Mosquera got into space last night, but again, his final execution was just awful. So many times. But the good news is he got into those good spaces, and not every game is, you know, going to feature an all-star performance by every player. But I do think Atlanta United has a left-wing problem right now. John De Silva has not played well this season. Tyler Wolf, much like Mosquera, was getting into good spots, but the execution was just lacking. So I'm assuming we're going to see Silva start at Chicago, but, you know, he's got to start producing. Nick continues, the team is completely unable to adapt during a game. It always takes the halftime break to see a change in the strategy. Why? Yeah, that's one that has puzzled me for a while too, especially since they've added all these veteran players. You know, recognizing situations, communicating, figuring out, and changing during a match, that's on the players. The coach can't do that. I don't know if it's a lack of leadership. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Nick says, as for the performance of the team, it got 1 point out of a potential 6 in 2 home games. In any top tier, the coach would be feeling the heat. Maybe a little pressure is what Pineda needs to turn things around. He says, I'm sure we're going to hear his usual, we'll learn and improve, but at some point he needs to deliver the second part of the statement. Thanks for all the work you do. It's a privilege to have such great coverage of the team. Thanks, man. No, I don't think Pineda's in trouble of being fired. Now, if they go to Chicago and this happens again, maybe. You know, the guaranteed portion of his contract ends this season. I did learn last week the team does have an option for next year on Pineda's contract. So that's a little bit of news for y'all. We'll see if that gets exercised. If the team doesn't finish top four, I don't think it's going to get exercised. If the team doesn't do better in Leagues Cup, I don't think it gets exercised. I don't think U.S. Open Cup is going to have a big impact on it. But these kind of mistakes can't continue to happen. It's only two. It's only the two times this season it's happened. So I don't want to say that it's a there's a flaw in the DNA of the team or a flaw in the coaching. But I would say that it probably can't continue to happen. All right. I'm soon driving up to Chattanooga to go watch a concert in the Caverns tonight with my friend Rob, so that's fun. Got to spend a good Friday with my kids, Will and Sarah, who's in the social work program at Georgia, and she's already been accepted into the grad school there, and I'm very, very proud of her. Went to a baseball game, which was a lot of fun. Always good to see them. It's been a good week for getting to see the kids, so I want to tell you, if your kid's in college, if they're on the other side of the country, give them a text, give them a call, tell them you love them. Ask them how their day is going. Hug your loved ones. Communicate with your loved ones. Try to be empathetic. Try to be aware. If you see a homeless person and you see them consistently, give them something they can use. You know, give them a toothbrush. Give them toothpaste. Get one of those old travel pack things. Something that may make their life a little bit easier. Thanks for listening to Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Y'all take care.
Ocean Breeze. Tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
I'm Ernie Suggs, race and culture reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
And I'm Ned Ravone, lifestyle columnist. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. I've been living here for 24 years, and I am still amazed at how rich the city's Black culture continues to grow. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
Like historically Black colleges and universities.
Atlanta's thriving arts scene.
And the city's growing neighborhoods.
Wherever you live, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what issues are important to you.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
Only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.